On Wednesday's front page, Supreme Court nominee Elena Kagan turned aside questions about her views on gun rights and abortion. Officials at troubled insurance giant AIG are wondering whether they were misled into insuring mortgage deals that Goldman Sachs was well aware had problems. And the political impact of the Gulf oil spill is reaching far beyond the Gulf. I'm James Barron. All the news that's fit to podcast begins right now. Our top story says Supreme Court nominee Elena Kagan deflected questions about her views on gun rights and abortion. On the second day of her confirmation hearings, she also backpedaled from her past claim that nominees should talk in specific terms about their constitutional views. She refused to say whether the Supreme Court did the right thing when it took on the presidential election in 2000. She did say that when to intervene is, in her words, an important and difficult question, and she wouldn't answer it because it could come before the court if she's confirmed. She also clashed with Alabama Senator Jeff Sessions over Harvard Law School's decision to bar military recruiters while she was the dean there. Wednesday's Times says this was the year Chief Justice John Roberts took control of the court. He pushed hard on issues he's concerned about, including campaign finance and gun rights. He was in the majority 92% of the time, more than any other justice. But Times reporter Adam Liptak says the court is in an unpredictable phase. That'll only intensify if the Senate confirms Ms. Kagan. At the troubled insurance giant AIG, executives are asking whether they were misled into insuring mortgage deals that Goldman Sachs knew were flawed. This comes in the wake of the SEC's civil fraud suit against Goldman for possibly misrepresenting a mortgage deal. An Australian hedge fund has already sued Goldman on similar grounds. Goldman is contesting the allegations and denies any wrongdoing. Wednesday's Times has new details on the Russian spy ring that operated in this country. The FBI had been tracking the spies for more than a decade. Investigators closed in because one of the suspected spies was planning to fly out of the U.S. on Sunday. Times reporter Scott Shane looks at what the ring did or did not accomplish.
In more than a decade of operating secretly, using all kinds of secret techniques, they don't appear to have collected a single piece of classified information that they passed to Moscow. So the question people are asking is, why couldn't these guys have just set up a think tank and operated openly? Why did they have to be spies? Part of the answer might be that they were enjoying their lives in the United States, buying nice houses, raising their children, and posing as ordinary Americans.
Times reporter Scott Shane. The shadowy money man behind the ring was captured overseas as Russian officials denounced the arrests. But officials in Moscow and in Washington say the spy case won't tear at diplomatic relations that have been on the mend. Economics columnist David Leonhardt says the world's richest countries are repeating an economic policy out of the 1930s. They're starting to cut spending and raise taxes before a recovery is a sure thing. They're hoping things will be different this time. He says there's evidence on both sides, but on Tuesday, pessimism was the better bet. Stocks fell around the world on worries about the long term. The Dow Jones Industrials lost 268 points, closing at 9870.30. It was the first time the Dow had slid below 10,000 in 3 weeks. The Gulf oil spill is turning into an election issue. Candidates around the country are trying to use the oil spill to their advantage. Times reporter Damian Cave says that surprisingly, some of the hottest rhetoric is coming from far beyond the Gulf.
In states like Missouri, the Democratic candidate for Senate, Robin Carnahan, has launched a series of attack ads against her opponent, Roy Blunt, claiming that he favors a big oil bailout. Now, this is clearly an exaggeration, but it speaks to a common theme. Any connection to the oil industry has basically become toxic. You've got Democrats arguing that the spill is a consequence of deregulation and Republican coziness with big business, and you've got Republicans arguing that the government response has been atrocious and that this is how Democrats rule. In the Gulf states, it's more complicated and more emotional. You've got candidates trying to out-outrage and out-empathize each other, and those who are already in state office have an advantage. So people like Governor Charlie Crist, who recently abandoned the Republican Party to run as an independent for the Senate, now find themselves on the TV news almost every night, being seen by voters fighting VP and fighting for Floridians. His opponent, Marco Rubio, the Republican candidate, meanwhile is being forced to defend his prior support for offshore drilling.
Times reporter Damian Cave. Inside Wednesday's Times, Ms. Kagan wasn't the only one facing questions at a confirmation hearing. General David Petraeus went before the Senate Armed Services Committee. He signaled what could be the first departure from General Stanley McChrystal, whom President Obama fired last week. Washington Bureau Chief Dean Baquet explains.
It was interesting testimony. There had been many complaints about General McChrystal putting too many restrictions, some of the troops thought, on their ability to operate in Afghanistan. And they were concerned that it made Afghanistan a more dangerous place for them. McChrystal's view, which is a significant piece of the operation in Afghanistan, is that there needed to be a significant cutback in civilian casualties, and that put more restrictions on the troops. What Petraeus said is that he would review the rules that the troops were complaining about. But this is a bind for them. The whole strategy that they've used in Afghanistan is to try to win the hearts and minds of the Afghan people, which means that they have to cut back on civilian casualties. So this is going to be tricky to pull off.
Washington Bureau Chief Dean Baquet. Saddam Hussein and the 2003 American invasion that overthrew him remain sensitive subjects as Iraq revamps its history curriculum. One high school teacher in Baghdad says both subjects are off limits. Officials at the education ministry say they'll work it out by 2012. A $1.4 billion plan to turn a former sugar refinery into a residential development on the Brooklyn waterfront passed a major hurdle. The New York City Council's Land Use Committee voted to approve it. That was after the developer agreed to cut the size of the two tallest towers and provide a shuttle bus to the nearest subway. The developer is promising that more than 25% of the apartments there will go to poor and working-class tenants. Wednesday's dining section looks at an oyster farm in New York Harbor. It's behind the ventilation tower for the Brooklyn Battery Tunnel. The oysters are being raised by Pete Malinowski, who's teaching aquaculture at a high school. Incoming freshmen have to swallow an oyster. Eating a harbor oyster could make you sick. The ones they swallow at the school come from Malinowski's parents' oyster farm, 100 miles away. That's our preview of Wednesday's Times. For a look at all of these stories, go to nytimes.com. I'm James Barron. Thanks for spending this part of your day with us.